This is a recording with Reverend Dr. Timothy Toh, Ascension number 002007 Real 10. And that's how the song... Mm-hmm. The song became an inspiration.
Yeah. That. And then it was very stirring, the tune. Yeah.
Mm. Right.
The tune is to Annie Laurie, one of the beautiful Scots folk songs, I think. Mm-hmm. It's a love song to Annie Laurie.
Mm-hmm. It's written in Thanksgiving. Hmm? It's written in Thanksgiving for the...
It is a song to inspire them to give.
Right. Right. Now, closer to Bueller House would be a song that you've written about Life Church. Come to Life Church.
Yeah, that was written many years ago.
Do you want to comment on that?
Well, again, it's a tune that stir up the emotions, and it's a tune of the church in the Wildwood. Mm. It's a very famous song, and every time I go to the international conference, the group from Central America will sing the song. Every time they'll sing the song. Mm. Well, that strikes a responsive chord in my heart. So when I came back, I wrote on modified from that Church in the Wildwood. So it's a sort of a parody, not exactly, but I borrow some ideas from there, then I depart from there to write my song. And Come is the same.
All right.
Come to Life Church.
All right. Would you consider that as a theme song for the church?
So now that becomes a theme song for the church, and every Life Church anniversary we'll sing this.
Right.
Only once a year we'll sing this.
Right. Okay. Closer Back Home would be the song written Singapura.
Oh, that is my prize song.
Mm-hmm. How so?
It was the second last day of our stay in Israel. We stayed there 5.5 months. Mm. At that time, Jemima was in my arms. We went there when she was 18 months. We came back when she was exactly 2 years. Mm. So we went to Ashdod. It's one of the seaside, one of the ports of Israel. If you look at the map, you're Ashdod. And we went to the seaside. Carlson brought me along and said, well, you are leaving for home. And it was January. And although it was winter, that it was a very sunny day. So I went to the beach, and when I saw the blue ocean, and when I came to Singapore, at once I thought of Singapore, see.
Mm.
So at once the words flow, oh, fairest isle of southern seas, the mm-hmm. waters are so blue. The mm. first two lines came right away.
Right.
So I got back to the house, and I finished it that evening.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tune to America.
Right.
But Singapura fits with America. America, Singapura. And that is also a patriotic song. It is a song of America. So I wrote Singapura, also based on the patriotic feelings of the song to America.
Mm.
And then during that time, after I came back, there was 1970, 71, 72, the Straits Times had a Poets' Corner that was under the charge of Kirpal Singh.
Mm.
He is now professor of English, I think, in the
U. Right.
So I submitted several of my poems, and I got 3 prizes for 3 poems I submitted.
Mm.
But when I submitted this one, I got a first prize.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirpal Singh was very happy. He said, this is a good anthem, actually, for our nation, because it talks of God.
Mm.
Although he's a singer, he's happy because it talks of God. We should write a tune for this to be sung.
Mm.
And then they gave me $35 first prize.
Right. So since then, life has been singing it on National Day.
So I've ever since written that, I have sung it for Life Church.
Mm.
Other churches, except Fairfield, one day, Benny Tsung, one of our members, brought this song to the Fairfield Methodist Church. I said, this is written by my pastor, you know. That's a very good song. So Fairfield Methodist adopted it, and they sang it for the National Day. That's the only instance I hear that some other church sings.
Right.
But we sing it in the church, you see, because this is a church praying for the nation. And whether the nation would like to sing this or not, maybe after I die, they will want to sing it. Not now.
Okay, just one more song. Our God is a loving Father.
Well, this is very interesting. I went to Melbourne 1989 and 1990. Each time I went there, I spent 10 weeks to nurture the young church. And when I got there, there is this fellow called Patrick Lee. He was a young man, and they were going to Brisbane as a church family. I think two families got together in one van, and they were driving to Brisbane. When on the way, they met with a fatal accident. The van crashed into a tree, and I think two people died. But Patrick Lee would have died if he did not change position. Before the accident, he changed position to the back, and a young man, I think his treasurer of the church, went to the front, and he was killed. So Patrick Lee got converted through this traumatic experience, and he became a new man. He was still a student in the university, I think, just beginning. Now, he has some musical talent, and he wrote several tunes. And of the three tunes, I've used two. And the Lord, our God is a loving Father. He wrote this tune. It sounds very stately, and it's fitting for a psalm. So I wrote on this tune, I wrote, the Lord our God is a loving Father. And it's based on Psalm 103. And so, I've sung this so-called psalm. It's a psalm in our church for quite a few times. And it has been sung by other churches too. So this is out of my contact with Australia, Melbourne.
Generally, when you wrote all these songs, do you have a targeted audience in mind, or was it?
Yeah, we have like a Beulah House, Beulah Land, targeted to the live congregation. But this is a very general one.
Right.
As a good worship psalm.
Likewise for songs on Holy Land.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Right. Any particular song that actually gave fulfillment to your life?
Well, I would say the FEBC anthem will be perpetuated in the college. And I feel proud about it because other colleges, they just pick one of the songs to say, Be Thou My Vision. That is Singapore Bible College. But ours is specially tailored out of the tears and the struggles of the heart, I say.
Yeah. Reverend Toh, moving away from songs to books, I understand that you have written perhaps more than 30 books.
Yes.
Would you like to comment on one of the toughest books that you have written?
All right. The greatest, I think, is Calvin's Institutes Abridged. That's on the top there.
You took 3 to 4 years to complete that.
I took maybe about 2 years to finish books 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
And then thereafter, I took another 1 or 2 years to finish 3 and 4.
Mm-hmm.
But then I didn't publish book 3 or 4 until very lately.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that book 1 and 2, I printed 7,000 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent 1,000 to Dr. McIntyre in America, where they distributed and so forth. And I had 6,000. And I was quite a daring fellow to print so many, you know.
Mm.
And how the money came, I don't know. I forget how I got the money.
Mm.
But it was printed. And it took all these years to consume the remaining 6,000.
Mm.
So I was constrained to print it as one book.
Mm-hmm.
When it came to the end of the 6,000, because there's no more.
Mm-hmm.
But before we came to 6,000, I said, well, why do I print? We want to sell all this. We sell and we distribute. And the white book, the first two books in one volume, was very saleable.
Mm.
Dr. Stephen Tong, you have heard of him?
Mm-hmm.
Bought 200 copies for his seminary.
Mm.
And this is an illustration of how the books had a very popular sale.
Mm. What inspired you to write The Abridgment of Calvin's Institute?
Because when I went to Faith Seminary in America, and I learned all the subjects, Greek and Hebrew, and all the theology and so forth, and we came to the theology of John Calvin.
Mm.
And met it as a group, because Calvin is a theologian of theologians, because when he writes, it's quite different from others.
Mm.
And he writes most progressively and logically and very powerfully and most deeply.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a first year student and was introduced to Calvin's Institutes. I was so gripped by it that in the following summer, 4 months, the following summer, three to four months in America, I used a Chambers Dictionary to read the four books of Calvin, 1,600 pages.
Mm.
With the dictionary, I still had the book where I annotated the deep meanings of words.
Mm.
So I was completely sold to Calvin's theology, because suddenly I realized that I have a sovereign God who controls everything. I did not know this because of the green horn when I came to seminary. And that he saves us and saves us forever.
Mm-hmm.
Once saved, always saved. Wow, I was very happy to learn this.
Mm-hmm.
So when I came back to Singapore to teach in 1962, I began to teach Calvin. And as I taught the course, I began to abridge.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So then lately, because we're coming to the end of the sales of the white book, the first volume, then I got books 3 and 4 typed out and printed as one book.
Right.
And this is about 2 years ago.
Right. Now, Dr. Tu, you have written a variety of books. What actually inspired you to write? Just like what inspired you to write the series?
Well, it started by writing a biography.
Mm.
Joshua Lim, do you know? He's the elder of Calvary.
Mm-hmm.
And his son is a minister now. But Lim.
Lim Boon Heng, Lim Hung Kiam? John?
My memory is very bad these days.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway.
David Lim.
David Lim, that's right. David Lim, his father is Joshua Lim, elder of Calvary. He's now partly settled in Perth.
Mm.
He shuttles between. And his father is called Lim Pui Hien. And Lim Pui Hien was a disciple of John Sung. And Lim Pui Hien in his days saved thousands, where John Sung saved 10,000.
Mm.
He was a lesser light, but he also was a very good evangelist. So he was my good friend because my first wife was saved under him, Nancy. And therefore, we become good friends. Of course, I'm much younger than he. So he was quite sad because his ministry was short-lived. Not that he died, but he had about 5 years of very powerful ministry. But after that, his sermons were not received on repentance and sin. The people's hearts were became hardened. So he had a small ministry, preaching in small churches, here or there, without much result. And then he retired in a son's house and lived there for several years.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, they stayed at Mang Sil, quite near here. And so he died at the age of 74, quite suddenly. So the son was quite sad and wept and so forth. Then I comforted him. I said, don't cry. Your father is my good friend, and he lived a very great life.
Mm.
All right, I promise to write the book to comfort you.
Mm.
Because I uttered these words.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the first book I wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a copy of that?
No. Biography.
In John Sung's Steps, The Story of Lim Pui Hien.
Mm.
I spent quite a lot of time research from all his books and papers and diaries and records and wrote up the story.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that the way I write it and so forth was very readable. I didn't know that I could write. And that was the first time. So I think it was the year 1975 or 76 I first wrote. And this is after I've already written songs. But this was the first book I wrote. I think the date is wrong. Not 1970. It is... I cannot tell.
It's all right.
But anyway, is it in the list here? In John Sung's Steps, can I have a look at the sheet? No, it is. It is not here. It is my first book.
Right.
So after I wrote this, I began to acquire a taste to write some more. And from there, I launched into writing. But of course, the first one was Calvin said, that's abridgment. That's not writing, but abridgment.
I think one of the significant features in all your writings is that you were able to translate very complex ideas into simple language. How would you explain that?
Well, that is studied way of writing. In other words, I purposely present it in such a way that the lay reader will easily absorb. But if you have some high-flown phrase, and it may be very beautiful English, but if it doesn't grip the understanding of the lay person, that is no good. But even to write it in their language, so that they can easily grasp. And also, my style all comes from the King James Bible. The King James is very beautiful with balance of cadences, I think you know. So I write it with the help of much of King James. As David Marshall says, that King James was his literature book. He said the King James built up his English. And I would say exactly the same.
Did you purpose in your heart every year that you would write certain books, or does it come
out of inspiration? Well, now as I go along, I seem to have the feeling that I must write at least two books a year.
Right.
But this year I may be writing 3 books. Mm-hmm. The one is with Jeff, A Theology for Every Christian. Mm-hmm. And the second, my homiletics, mm-hmm. my homiletic swimming pool
right.
is coming out. And now it grips me to answer these Puritans, mm-hmm. very holier than thou and legalistic people, mm-hmm. the story of my Bible Presbyterian faith. I want to write it in a story. Mm-hmm. I feel that's the best way to grip them.
Right. At what time of the day would you usually do your writing?
In the wee hours of the morning. Mm-hmm. Usually between 2:30 to 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock.
It would be interesting at this point in time to trace a day in the life of Timothy Toh. Would you like to describe how a day is spent productively?
Well, when the term is on, you are regimented. When the term is off, then I've got all the liberty to spend my day. And I don't believe that you must get up at a certain time and then to do your quiet time, and then it's counted as being the standard norm of holiness. Mm. If I'm tired, I just sleep.
Right.
I don't have to keep time to, because I've been writing from 1 o'clock to 4:30. Mm. Then if I don't go and sleep, I'll be groggy all day. Mm. I must sleep again.
Mm. Why the choice of writing it in the wee hours of the morning?
I don't know. You just wake up. It comes to be a sort of a pattern. Mm-hmm. And you go to bed, say, at 11. Mm. But by the time it's 1:30 or 2 o'clock, you wake up very fresh. Mm-hmm. So you take advantage of the coolness and the silence of the night to write. Mm-hmm. And so this morning I got up at 1:30 and I wrote until 3 o'clock. Mm-hmm. This is my off hours, you know, not when we are lecturing. Mm-hmm. We are now on vacation.
Mm-hmm. Is this a daily practice of yours?
Well, if a book is on, then that will be more or less every night you get up and you do something about it. Mm-hmm.
Reminds me of SM writing his memoirs also in the early mornings.
yeah. Somewhat like that.
Yeah.
When you get old, you don't sleep that much. Mm. And that's an advantage. Mm. But I don't care. If I like to sleep and I feel very sleepy, I just go ahead. And I think that is the secret of health. Mm-hmm. You don't regiment yourself. If you want to sleep, just sleep.
Right.
And if you can sleep, all the better. Mm-hmm. But then you get up very fresh. Mm-hmm. But if you are not satisfied with having a good sleep, and you regimen or force yourself, mm-hmm. it doesn't pay.
Right.
And let it take its course.
Right. Now, Reverend Toh, in wrapping up the history of the Life Bible Presbyterian Church in Singapore, can you comment on the renewal of church leadership?
This is a very high mystery. Mm. I think we should thank God for Goh Chok Tong, mm-hmm. that Lee Kuan Yew has found one. And I think he is far above Lee Hsien Loong. Mm-hmm. If Lee Hsien Loong were to head our nation, he wouldn't be going up to see Mahathir, mm-hmm. I think. Mm-hmm. But Goh Chok Tong has a way of humility, and he explains it to the people. People like it. Mm-hmm. Even my brother's Malay driver, oh, Goh Chok Tong, good. Lee Hsien Loong. Of course, it's not good for me to compare.
Sure.
But I think we have a wonderful successor in Goh Chok Tong, and I think he's already made a mark. Mm-hmm. In the spiritual world, it's very hard to say. I've got so many assistant pastors, mm-hmm. but they just leave me. Some out of ambition, some out of gain. Mm-hmm. And I wish that I can have a successor who will hold two portfolios, mm-hmm. both pastor and principal. That's how the tradition has been established.
Right.
So that I can quarrel with myself.
Mm.
And I favor one against the other is still the left and right pockets.
Right.
So everything is very harmonious mm-hmm. under one head.
Mm.
As for me now, I have a successor in the college.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very happy for Dr. Jeffrey Koo.
Mm.
Because he has 100% viewpoint and principle and spirit with me. He believes in all the doctrine of BPism that I teach. I'm also very happy for the college that after him, like Swan Yu and Jackson, Koshi, Bob, Colin, they are all practically on the same wavelength. Now maybe a little bit not exactly like Jeffrey Koo. And I feel that Jeffrey will be able to pass on, and we pray with really thank God it is now 37 years now that we have maintain this line without being infiltrated. There has been forces of infiltration to take over, but we have guarded and we have expelled and kept it pure. Under Jeffrey, I believe he will continue, so at least will last another generation. You know, schools, the last one generation is topple.
Right.
Very sad.
Right.
But for FBBC, we thank God for continuing. And this is very, very happy. Church, to be fair, I must wait.
Right.
Yeah.
Would there be any conscious effort on your part to groom any particular leaders
naturally,
to take over you?
Every leader would want to groom some successor.
Right.
But then it's not something that can come by because you wish. It must be... I believe divine intervention too. If you wish, but then you don't find the real stuff, you know.
Right. How would you comment on the future trend of the BP movement in Singapore then? Future trend.
Well, we are split up.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody wants to be number one, right?
Mm-hmm.
It may be as well, because it's no use to run a three-legged race. Against the wheel. And they all tie together, you cannot run. So I think it's good to let them freewheel now. Until such time, maybe one more generation. And if they see things eye to eye, that they have now learned the hard way of going out into the cold and each one fending for himself, and you realize this is time for us to gather together, as it is a history in the English Presbyterian Church. They are very strong together, then they dwindle off, then finally they gather together in a revival. Let nature take its course. But I will not want to gather the people, so we must come together, because I don't see that there is much benefit. If we do, there is still the line of hurt somewhere there, and it's not easily patched up.
Right.
And then if we try to get together with Zion, they are under a modernistic pastor, Kwik Swee Hwa. He gets people from Fuller, from region. These are all the signers of the ECT. And ECT is evangelicals and Catholics together. Well, if he's for the ICC and for separation, he would not be doing it. But then he thinks he's very clever. He can get these people to compromise. So we cannot get together.
Right. One last question for you, Reverend Toh. What would be your advice for young and aspiring pastors? your personal advice for young and aspiring pastors?
First of all, he must know where the Lord calls him. It's very important. You cannot be just dribbling here and there, and where the pasture is greener, then you go there. It's no use. And I'm very happy to learn from Kok Hyung, because when I went there two times. The first time I told him, I asked him, how long you expect to stay here? He said, well, maybe 5 or 10 years. I said, finish for you. If you say I'm going to die here, you succeed. This time I asked him, I said, what are we going to do? I'm going to die here. Okay. In other words, wherever the Lord puts us, we must know our call there and then stick to it. But there are those who are coming up, they're not very sure, and they try to work themselves up, you know. That sort of a thing will not work. I know the Lord put me here. That's why I don't move. McIntyre asked me many times, come and work with me in America. I said, sorry, my place is Singapore. One of the things I know why, because I've got the Chinese languages. And there are 13 of our branches now in Malaysia. 11 are founded by me.